Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and today I'm very pleased to have as my guest the winner of a special state Senate election just north of here that not only shocked the Iowa political establishment, but attracted national attention as well. He's Mike Zimmer, and he's here today to tell us how he won and what his agenda is now in Des Moines. Senator Zimmer, thank you so much and congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. And I will say, as sustaining members of WVIK, I'm happy to join your audience.
Very good. Thank you for the plug. Gosh, it's been a whirlwind couple months. I was doing my preparation for this, and literally 2 months ago, here we are. Former Senator Chris Conoyer was named, Governor Reynolds named her as the new lieutenant governor on December 16th. Let's go back first and share with our listeners this whole process after that happened. How did you first get interested in this, and kind of tell us the story, if you would?
Well, I will say that I'm only recently retired after 40 years of serving public education as of June 30th, 2023. And I would say maybe a month, not even more than that, I was approached by community members in the Central Community School District in DeWitt about possibly running for school board. And I was like, well, I just kind of stepped out of the admin role of that. I'm not sure I want to step into the governance side of it, but I thought, well, maybe I have a skill set that the community could benefit from. My two oldest daughters had graduated from Central DeWitt. We still lived in the district. And so I ran, and it was my honor to be elected to that position. And then when I was sworn in in November of 2023, then I turned around and was nominated by the other board members to become board chair. And I said, or board president, I said, this is not normal that a new board member would then turn around and on their first thing be the board president. But that was fine. And so we had a lot of things that we were working on with that school district, and I was heavily involved with that. And that was my commitment, was to that school district. And so I was just starting in my second year, and I had been reelected as board president by my colleagues, and I consider that to be a great honor. And we were continuing to do some pretty heavy lifting on finance side of it that has been all publicly aired. We hired a new superintendent. We just had a lot going on. And so, you know, here we are heading into the Christmas holiday, and all of a sudden, this position comes open, and I really didn't give it much of a thought, but it just so happens that the Iowa Democratic Party chair, Rita Hart, happens to live in Clinton County, and she's also the chair of the Clinton County Democrats. She holds both titles, and boy, she was, let's just say she was putting some pretty heavy convincing about, oh, Mike, you're the right person for this position. I said, yes, but I'm already committed to the school district. Oh, but you can do more at the next level. And I really held off as long as I could. And then on December 19th, I was like, well, I talked to my family, to my wife. I said, you know, this is has become a pretty toxic political environment. Yeah. It's becoming less about serving serving your constituents and more about some, I don't even know how to describe it. So I don't know, something more about, you know, political agendas and culture and climate stuff. And I'm like, that's not what I'm interested in. But I visited with the family and they were supportive of this. And then I called my board members and I said, hey, I'm thinking about this. What do you think? And all of them were like, Mike, I think you could do more for us out at the state level. We appreciate your help. And so I proverbially put my hat in the ring on December 19th. And holy cow, Iowa code then says that if you are going to request a special voting place, if you wanted to have an in-person day, you only had 30 days from the announcement to get that done. And I know that in the northern Scott County, Parkview is a very large unincorporated area. The Lutheran church there had often been the voting site for everybody. And so we made a determination, my family and the Clinton County Democratic Party and even the Iowa Democratic Party sent some people over, and we did door knocking on the Thursday right after Christmas. So the 26th and the, let's see if I'm going to, the Wednesday was the 25th, Thursday was the 26th, Friday was the 27th. Anyway, we needed to knock and get a petition for this nonpartisan just to get an in-person voting place. And so we got 100 signatures to do one in Parkview, and we got 100 signatures to do one in DeWitt. And we got that done in 48 hours and got it submitted to each of the auditors. And I was always a little bit hesitant because I thought, God, here I am asking the taxpayers of Iowa, or at least in our region, to put these, to man these two separate sites. And I thought, oh boy, what's going to happen if only five people show up at them or something like that? And they've spent $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 to have these sites added in. Well, When those dates came on the early voting, in-person early voting, I think there were 500 or close to 500 in DeWitt that came. It's Republican, Democrat, Independent, doesn't matter. And then it was close to 250 or something like that in the Parkview area. So we were happy to see the turnout, that it validated our efforts in at least having those in-person early voting for both parties. Didn't matter. Yeah. So that was kind of how that went. And then I ran unopposed when we had our county conventions, because Jackson County had to have a convention, Democratic convention, Clinton County and Scott County. All three of those had to have a party convention. And I ran unopposed, and we got that convention voting done early so that I could get going with both the fundraising, the door knocking, all that kind of stuff. And to be honest with you, I had no idea how to run a campaign, no idea. And so the Iowa Democratic Party, through Rita Hart and Minority Leader Janice Weiner, they committed the resources to send over Tyler Redenbaugh. He is with the Senate Majority. And he came over and basically coordinated the campaign and said, hey, this is the door knocking you need to do. Here's the postcards you need to do. Here's the phone calls that you need to do. And he actually came over and lived in the area through the duration of the campaign. And without him and that guidance, there is no way we would have won. He put together a campaign that said, this is what has to happen. This is what you need to do. And so all of the, on the finance part of it, this is all public record. I think we ended up raising probably close to $50,000, and it cost about $30,000 to do the digital ads that everybody was saying, oh, I saw you on Hulu, or I saw you on YouTube or whatever it was. And I don't know anything about that. They did the recording. He put it all out. And then I spent probably about $10,000 on what I call paper products, the 4x8 signs, the yard signs, of which, by the way, those are pretty hard to put in the ground when it's frozen.
I mean, I think it's an incredible story because it's hard, you know, a special election, you got 1 month and this is a Senate district. And to top it off, it's in the dead of winter, which I feel like you're a Midwesterner. Our January wasn't that bad compared to last year's. But if you're out knocking doors, I mean, you enlisted quite a few people in this effort, and that's what makes it really interesting. I mean, was it hard to get people motivated to say, hey, you want to go out and knock doors on a night that's about 10 degrees after the sun goes down and help me out?
Well, Robin, it's interesting you ask that question because I'm going to be honest with you. November was brutal for Democrats. I mean, everybody was pretty down, pretty disheartened, and to be and myself included, because we did the parades. My wife and I door knocked for all of our candidates, and that was when the weather was warm and the ground was soft. To take this on, there was kind of a pause, but I think. Once I just know a lot of people in Scott County. I mean, that's where I have lived and taught and worked my entire life. And so I think once we had a candidate and people felt like, hey, this is somebody we can get behind, I was actually humbled by the number of people that stepped up, not just in Scott County, Clinton County, Jackson County. We had people from Polk County, from Johnson County, from Jones County. I was like, wow, this is what happens when you're the only game in town. So I was spoiled by, I had the whole attention of the entire Democratic state side of it on this one race. Whereas, let's be honest, when the November, because I'm going to have to go through all this again for November 2026, because this is just to finish out Senator Knoyer's term. So a year from now, we're going to be having to ratchet all this up again. And I know that at that point in time, it's going to be Senator Ernst's position. We'll have a national senator. We're going to have all four congressional seats. We're going to have a governor's race up. Those of us on the down ballot, we're going to probably be more of an afterthought, but at least to see what has to be done when you have the resources marshaled to do a successful campaign, I think we set an example of this is what it takes. This is the ground game that it takes. These are the resources that you have to have, whether it's a school board seat or whether it's a representative seat or a Senate seat. At the local level or state level, this is the support you have to have.
Mike, as you mentioned, Trump won this district, I think I read, by about 20, 21 points. Senator Knoyer had won it by, I think, about 20. You won by about 4 points. This district is heavily working class. And for our listeners, that's defined in political terms as people without college degrees. And that is the biggest divide we have by educational attainment. The Democrats are really having problems nationally, as you know, losing working class voters who have been a part of their coalition since the days of FDR. What did you do differently, and what advice can you give to other Democrats around to address this issue? And this is why I think your victory attracted a lot of national attention, because of the nature of the district. It's Clinton County is one of those Obama-Trump districts.
Yeah, that's a great question also. And I'm going to say I don't want to read so much into a special election. I mean, because again, everything we talked about, I was the only game in town. I'm a somewhat known entity because I taught many, many of the adults or whatever that live in the Central Community School District. I had as students, they're now in their 40s. They have children. And it comes down to trust. They know who I am. And there's a relationship there. And for those folks that didn't know me, I will say, honestly, there was no political conversations going on in Iowa in January, door to door. Let's be honest. It was like, yeah, I know who you are. I got your mailing. I saw you on television. And we targeted Democratic voters to make sure they got out to vote. Where I had an opportunity to talk to people in a warm setting would either be one through the television interviews that I did with Channel 4, Channel 6, Channel 8, WQPT, Public Television Air Western, where I had an opportunity to answer questions put forth. And then at the two forums, we had a forum in DeWitt. And unfortunately, I'm trying to provide grace that my opponent did not show up to much of any of that. I don't know why their campaign strategy was that way, but she was really an unknown quantity to people. And the DeWitt forum went because she was sick. So I had the whole hour to answer a whole array of questions to everybody that was there, everything from school funding to water quality to carbon sequestration. And I'm going to give credit where credit is due, but thank goodness for public radio, because I'm a junkie and I listen to many of the programs and I learn a lot thanks to public radio. And so I'm able to at least speak with somewhat of knowledge, at least cursory at best, on some of the areas that I try to convey that I do my research. So that came across with a lot of folks. And I will tell to your listeners that one of the closing comments that I made at the DeWitt Forum, I said, you know, I don't vote straight party ticket. I try to do my research on the candidates. I try to listen to what they stand for. And I said, back in the day, I was a Jim Leach Republican. I mean, I love the guy. For those that are old enough to remember our representative for 32 some years. And even though I wasn't old enough to vote for Robert Ray, I appreciated everything that he did for Iowans. He really looked out for the best interests of Iowans. And that resonated with a lot of my Republican colleagues that I work with and I live with. They were like, yeah, that's that's who we used to be.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. This is your host, Robin Johnson. I'm your host, Robin Johnson. And my guest today is the newly elected state senator from the 35th District, Mike Zimmer. We've just been talking about what a whirlwind it's been for him the last couple months. And here he is in the U.S. Senate. It's almost like a Mr. Smith goes to Washington theme here a little bit. That's, as a film buff, that's what I think of. This district, for our listeners who don't know, it's Clinton County and Jackson, and comes down into Scott County a little bit. And Mike's been discussing how, you know, how he was able to win in a short time frame in the cold winter, which is very interesting, and how he was just helped by having experience and knowing a lot of people in all counties in the district as well. I want to turn a little bit to policy here, because I know you feel strongly about some issues. And of course, with your background in education, where you've been a teacher, a coach, an administrator, a principal, and now as president of the Central DeWitt School Board. What changes do you want to see? Discuss to me what your passion for education and what Iowa needs to do to improve schools in your mind.
Well, and just a correction, once I won the Senate seat, Iowa code does not allow me, through conflict of interest, I had to resign from the school board. And
yes,
so
they're
actually in the process of having a special election up there. And okay. I keep apologizing to them, but I said, it's the law is the law. But when it comes to school funding, what I find so disheartening is that I try to explain that Iowa is such a rare bird in this country, where we have such a equitable funding formula that's distributed equally between property tax and then what's called state supplemental weighting, which basically is money sent, collected by the state through corporate tax, through income tax, and through sales tax. And then those funds are redistributed back equally to all Iowa schools based on a per pupil basis. So if you have the students, you get the money. And that's quite different from a lot of other states in which schools are funded almost 100% through property tax. And that really creates an issue of the haves and the have-nots. And so that's an area that I'm very, very proud of, that Iowa has a long tradition of creating equity between. And the state of Iowa, they established what's called the state cost per pupil. We love our acronyms. It's called SCPP. But the bottom line is, yeah, when the legislature says, okay, we're going to approve all schools receiving, say, $8,000 per pupil, that's all you get. And that's all any school district, big or small, that's all they're allowed to spend, is that amount. So it doesn't make any difference if you're sitting in a community that's got a bunch of commercial and industrial that is considered property rich, or if you're in a school district that's rural with ag-related farm ground and maybe residential and very little commercial and industrial. That's all you're allowed to spend. So that portion of it is difficult for our legislators that don't understand the school funding formula, and they don't raise that what's called supplemental student aid. That is the money that is used to pay for bus drivers, food service, teachers. It pays for the electric bill. It pays for the water bill. It pays for all of that. And when that is not keeping pace with inflation, and on top of it, if a school district is losing students, it is a huge hit financially for districts to be able to literally keep the lights on.
What impact do you see as a local educator, because it's been a couple of years now of the school choice law and the fact that, some funds are being used now, public funds in private schools. Do you think that it's helped overall education levels? Has it hurt public schools? What would you do differently, if anything?
Well, first of all, to set up a parallel education system that is competing against the public school system doesn't make a lot of sense. But here's the epiphany that I had. I had a constituent that was reading the Clinton Herald, and she sent me an email, and she said, Mike, hey, I read that if I live in a property poor school district that I pay more in property tax. Is that true? And I said, yes, that's true. And then as I'm giving her an explanation of how school funding formula works, I get this epiphany going, wait a minute, the educational savings accounts or vouchers, they don't have access to property tax. They're not part of the school funding formula. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. I know how these are being paid for. These are being paid for by state income tax, sales tax, and corporate tax. Oh, wait a minute. How are school districts getting their portion of the supplemental, their portion of state aid? Oh, income tax, sales tax, corporate tax. So for politicians to say that, oh, they're two separate funds or it's two separate, no, they're not. So they're being paid for out of the same pot of money. So that's the portion that becomes somewhat, what's going to happen is it's going to be unsustainable. It was unsustainable when it was developed in Arizona, because what Iowa has done is they have capped the income tax at 3.8%. We've pretty well gotten rid of the graduated income tax. So if you're putting a cap on income tax that's being used to pay for the ESAs and the vouchers, And it has no bottom. There is no bottom to that amount of money other than what the state revenue is going to be able to bring in. I'm just going to look in my crystal ball. This is going to get crushed by its own inability to pay for itself. So, and there is no income tax level now for the voucher program. It was 400% of the federal poverty level for a family of four, which is $124,000 or $120-some thousand. Well, next year, there is no cap on that. So anybody that wants it, they're going to get it. And actually, at this point, it does me no good to sit there and rant and rave and vent about what I think about it. I'm going to let the finances, it's going to take care of itself. It is going to be unsustainable. It just is.
We breezed right through this interview, and I got time for one more question here, and I want to give you, I've got a couple minutes, 2 or 3 minutes here, but going back to the political side of this, Mike, what do you think there was a message sent? I mean, this was on all the national channels when you were elected, people trying to read into it what they will nationally. I think there were some local factors that were important here, but do you think it does send a broader message across the country about our politics, about the Democrats, about the Republicans?
I don't know about a broader message other than in this instance, as with any organization, it's about relationships. I tried to foster a lot of relationships over many, many years here, through living in the district, through teaching in the district, through having a small construction business in the district or that I live in. And I will talk to anybody anywhere. I feel that I work pretty hard. I'm hoping that the voters, they know they're going to get their money's worth out of me. I have no interest in talking about and beating up on cultural issues. I'm beating up on our gays, lesbians, transgender. I'm like, why are you attacking these folks? Just let people be who they're going to be and be respectful of everybody. And I hope that I come across as a rational person. And I try to think about how to problem solve an issue that comes up going, well, that's one way of solving it. Well, what about this way? Maybe we can think differently. And maybe if we work together, we can come up with a resolution that helps everybody. I don't know if that's a message that resonates, but it seemed to resonate with the people I talked to.
Well, Mike Zimmer's been our guest today on Heartland Politics. Congratulations again, the newly elected state senator in the 35th district, which is just north of the Iowa Quad Cities. In fact, it takes in a little bit of Scott County, Clinton County, and then Jackson County. Mike surprised the Iowa political world and nationally as well with his victory in that special election last month. And he's been our guest today. And I thank you very much for taking the time. I know you're very busy.
Thank you again very much. And I hope we can visit again as I go through this new adventure.
Absolutely.
Listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.